Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Very well, George. How are you doing?
I am well, and thank you so much for joining in this podcast, Once Upon a Leader in Africa. So welcome. Welcome very much.
Thank you.
So, Steve, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're currently doing.
Yeah, thanks, George. So, like you rightly said, my name is Stephen Ojuang. In other places, people call me Dr. Stephen Ojuang. I am a change catalyst, and I believe that I'm called to empower people and leaders around me to be able to reach their full potential so that together we can change the environment and the communities around us. And I've had the opportunity to do this at the workplace and at home as well, where I'm married to Lois, my beautiful wife, and between us, we have three children, Beraka, Gavi, and Eliana. And additionally, I serve as the CEO of Premier Care Hospital Group, which is a chain of clinics and a hospital that runs a hub and spoke model in the medical field, whereby we have a vision and a mission to provide quality healthcare to the underserved peri-urban communities in Africa. We are currently located in Machakos, Kajiado, and the Narok counties. And our mission is to reduce the distance traveled by people to access quality healthcare, because more than 80% of the population in East Africa have to travel for over 2 hours to access quality healthcare. So that briefly explains what I do. I trained as a medical doctor and as a radiologist at the Aga Khan Hospital. And I've also had an opportunity to train as a healthcare entrepreneur in addition to that.
Wow, great mission and vision for your company. So I just want to really understand, what inspired or motivated you to start this Premier Care Hospital Group?
Yeah, thank you, George. So in the year 2010, while doing my postgraduate studies in one of the hospitals in Nairobi, at the university, I noticed that we were serving a lot of people from not just within the country, but within the neighboring East African countries as well. And they had to travel very far to access quality healthcare that was being offered in that institution. And that is when the dream was born, to be able to decentralize that access to quality healthcare, because every human being deserves quality healthcare of the highest standards. So we got together with some friends, put up a proposal, and of course it gathered dust in the shelves, like many stories for entrepreneurs, but the dream did not die in me. We were then able to, after graduating from the university and working in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, we came back to the country, and by God's grace, we were able to start the business with my wife in 2014.
So now we've been running for 9 years.
Yes, sir. We've been running for 9 years. We began with the two employees, with my wife being the receptionist. And I always make the joke, she was the receptionist, the housekeeper, and I was the radiologist, I was the marketer. I was doing everything else. So we started as two employees, and we are now at 50. And looking to grow into 350 within the next 4 years. 350 leaders. We look at each of our staff as leaders.
Wow. You look at your staff as leaders. That's a good way of looking at your staff. So looking at your leadership journey, even as now you're leading this company, where can you say your leadership journey began?
Yeah, thanks, George. I think the first opportunity I had to lead people was back in high school when I was a prefect and was given charge of a dormitory to take care of. That is when I realized leadership is not for the faint-hearted. So I learned and developed skills from that time up to during the university in medical school. I had a leadership role in the Christian Union, and even in my postgraduate, I was the chief resident at some point, and that is when my skills were sharpened. But we keep learning; we are never there yet, so we keep learning every day, becoming better every day.
As you have led, you know, from that time, from high school until now, what are the leadership competencies you've relied on in your leadership journey?
It's very interesting. I think the most important thing that I've learned is to empower other people, which I believe is my vision, my life's purpose. Because to be able to drive impact across, irrespective of whichever industry, then we need to develop other people to become even better than us. So that is a skill that I've learned to embrace, to train people and to empower other people. Additionally, I've increasingly discovered, especially in the entrepreneurial space, that it is very important to have grit and resilience, because things are not always as easy as they seem. And being an entrepreneur, you know, life happens. There is always something that comes and flips your thoughts and expectations. So I've learned to take it with a lot of resilience. And we've had very good moments, but we've also had very tough moments in our journey at Premier Care. So I've learned that that's one of the things that we are encouraging our teams to really stick to and to embrace. It's also very important to be self-aware and to have emotional intelligence. I always tell my friends, my daughter is way steps ahead in terms of knowing her surroundings. Because I remember one day when you're having Bible study in college, and my friends started laughing when you were taking tea. So I had no idea what was happening and why they were laughing. For like a whole 5 minutes, everybody in the room is laughing except myself. So later is when one of them pointed out that people are laughing because of how loudly I was sipping the tea. And the naughty neighbor next to me was imitating me with every sip. And I had not figured it out. So obviously it was a very interesting moment. And I learned, you know, just to be aware, what is the environment around you as a leader? Are things changing? Are you moving too fast? Are you moving too slowly? Or did technology come and leave you? Is there a Kodak moment for you? So it's very important for any leader to be able to be self-aware. And I found that very useful, even in terms of reshaping our business model. And that goes along with the versatility as well as a skill. It's very important to be adaptive to changing business environments and embrace new opportunities, while at the same time discarding things which may no longer be fit. And I say that because in 2018, if I was to give an example, we've always prided ourselves in being the first diagnostic centers wherever we go in the counties that we go to. So we were doing well in Narok County, being the first diagnostic center with a CT, you know, X-ray and all those other facilities. But one day, all our main suppliers of, you know, all our main sources of client base decided to put up their own units, which was very good for the people. But from a business point of view, of course, it meant we needed to remodel ourselves. So very quickly, luckily we had seen it coming, and we then provided clients other opportunities to be able to access other services, like outpatient specialist services. And an inpatient facility, because we went there because people were traveling very far to access quality healthcare. They were coming to Nairobi. So when that market shifted with the government's program to do the equipment of the hospitals, we were happy. But at the same time, we had to remain relevant, and we had to change our model. And that is what has enabled us to still be relevant to the population today. So versatility is very important for any leader.
Wow, well said. So true. Yeah, and you talked about a Kodak moment. You know the story of Kodak, you know the story of Nokia, you know, guys who just were not aware of what was happening around them. And they were I mean, they were really hit so hard. Thank you for that. You talked about tough times, challenges. Just tell us, what are some of these tough times and challenges you have faced in your leadership journey?
When we started the business, we had a textbook, everything as a, you know, the textbook way of doing things. So we saved up for 6 months plus, and as a family, my wife had quit her job, and we were there together starting the, you know, our first clinic in a small town called Kitengela. And, you know, we had our savings, and we got one or two friends to be able to help us start during the runway period of the business. And unfortunately, something happened just before we launched. I remember we were to start on 1st December 2014. And in November, actually 3 months before, my dad fell quite sick and he needed quite a bit of support. So, and by then, NHIF was not covering such a treatment like dialysis. So let's just say that we spent all our savings treating him. And unfortunately, he passed on. But we, you know, we had to carry on with the dream. My wife didn't have a job, remember? I also didn't have any other job. I had a loan on my head for a small ultrasound unit that we had procured. And that was just it. And it was a moment of stretching, yeah? But by God's grace, we were able to come out of it. We had friends who supported us, and we really had to make the model work. So it gave us impetus to make the clinic work. We did not go back to employment. I had many opportunities, but I decided I would go back to employment. The other challenge that I would say is that for some reason, I've always been a late starter. I remember in class one, I was not doing very badly, but that is the only time I ever copied. I was intimidated by this girl who was seated next to me. And for some reason, I copied everything, including the name. So when the results came, there were two people who were called, let me use the name, Mary Kamau. So there were two Mary Kamaus who had the exact same marks. Both of them had 98%. So the teacher made me stand up, and everybody burst out laughing. And that moment, I never recovered. So the first 3 years of primary school until that, you know, there was transition to the next class with a different teacher, I was traumatized, and I picked up 4 years later. For some reason, that trend has kept following. It followed me in high school. I woke up in the third year of high school, and even thereafter. So I've always been a late starter, but I've always appreciated that as long as you get there, the most important thing is how you finish, not necessarily not always how you start, but how you finish the rest.
I just want to digress a little bit. You've talked about doing business with your wife. You guys own the business together, and that's something very unique. So my question is, how do you do it as a couple? Because I know some people can say, I can't work with my spouse. So just curious, how do you guys do it?
Well, we've had our season one and season two. So season one was very tough because we have different personalities. My wife is very analytical, which has really helped us quite a lot. And for me, you know, I'm the go-getter, the entrepreneur who wants to do things like yesterday. But, you know, I've had to learn to slow down and look at things before, critically, before making decisions or before making the next move. So we used to carry a lot of the work issues at home. So that obviously created conflict. So at some point, she asked to step back, went back to employment. And then we realized, hey, this thing, we both love working together, love what we do. So we go back together, I think about 3 years back up to now. But now everything had shifted. Work-related matters are only discussed at work. We had become wiser and we had learned to segment ourselves and to do work for work and to do home for home so that you don't carry work home and vice versa. So it's been an interesting journey of growth, especially for me. My wife has always been very sober. I think the steeper learning curve has been for me, just to look at things in a more objective manner, and also to, you know, to keep your head even when making decisions. It's also allowed us to grow both, not to take things personally. For example, things might be different at work, but when you get home, you leave everything that was discussed at work, and you know, and and you just handle the home's situation as it is with the children and the family differently.
Wow, that one takes some work, eh? Demarcating your lives, you know, your professional lives together and as a couple. Wow, kudos to you guys. You've balanced that well. Just getting back to what we were talking about, leadership. What do you enjoy most about your leadership journey?
I love the fact that I believe I'm living out my purpose, which is to empower people to reach their full potential. So every day we keep learning, keep getting challenged. I listen a lot more nowadays. I've learned the power of effective listening. And it has always been very interesting to watch people grow even through tough moments. One of the tough moments we had was when our lease was about to expire in one of the units. And we didn't know what to do because we were told, you guys, this is it. You need to move out. And the whole team was essentially homeless. But I just like the way the team came together, and we never looked back from then on. The business was not doing very well. That was in 2018. But from that moment of eviction, in quotes, everyone just saw the need of pulling together and coming together. So when I see people build up their resilience muscles, build up their stamina, their emotional stamina, I feel very encouraged that we are not doing this because of anything, but it's because God has allowed us to work as a team and as a unit.
And what do you endear most as a leader?
As a leader, is there anything that I really endure? I think leadership calls for iteration and adaptability and versatility, just, you know, learning every day. So I wouldn't say I have anything that I endure. I'm a very adaptable person, and I like challenges. I like new challenges every day. Arguably, I get bored when there are no challenges. So I'm a bit of an extreme, but yeah, I enjoy learning and becoming better every day.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And I think what you said, because you're living your purpose, you seem even to enjoy even the challenge and things coming as you lead. Most memorable moments for you as a leader?
The most memorable moment, maybe I will just pick one. There are many, but there was this girl who came and came to work for us. So when we looked at the CV and she had applied for a housekeeping job, we thought, surely this person is overqualified. But we are going to hire her simply because we believe in capacity development and growing people. So it was only a matter of time. She cleaned so well, and it was promoted to receptionist position. So when she moved to receptionist position, just the communication skills, the dealing with the clients, her phone demeanor, her etiquette was very good. And within no time, she moved to the next position as our lead marketer. And just to jump to the end of the story, now she is one of the senior executives in one of our sister hospitals. And I'm so proud. I think she is probably going to be the next CEO. I don't know. But looking at that journey just represents what Premier Care is about. It's about developing leaders. And it doesn't matter what their qualifications are or where people start. Everyone has an opportunity to grow and to become the best out of what they should be. So that gives me a lot of joy.
Ah, yeah. So that's a great, great story. So who or what has influenced you in your leadership development?
I think very strongly I would first go to my inner circle, because they say you're an average of the people you hang around. So as leaders, I believe we should have at least four key people within your inner circle. One is a mentor, someone you look up to, and someone who guides you, who's been there and done that. Number two is a coach. You know, people ask you the hard questions so that you're then able to live your life right. If you're not doing things right, then they'll ask you the hard questions. And my wife has gladly been asking me a lot of hard questions. Anyone who is married, of course, knows that. You need peers to challenge you, people who are probably at your level who will challenge you in a positive way and also offer accountability. And also, as a leader, everyone also needs a therapist. You know, when seasons are tough, who do you go to? So that inner circle has allowed me to really grow as a person, and I keep growing every day. So on a regular basis, I've been able to meet people in these different categories, and that has really helped me. I have an accountability partner who we've been meeting since medical school, more than more than 15 years back, and up to now we still meet on a regular basis, you know, asking the hard questions. Back then it was, why is your girlfriend taking too much time in your room? Yeah, now it's, how are you treating your wife? How, you know, how is business? So that has helped me develop as a leader. And also reading, they say you have to keep updating yourself with what is happening. So I'm a great fan of John Maxwell, you know, Simon Sinek, and even most importantly, the Bible. There are a lot of leadership lessons that we draw from the Bible. And you can imagine the impact that Christ had within a short 3 years of ministry, where he was able to impact the world using the 12 disciples. But even within that, he had an inner circle of three, and then was able to impart the 12. And from then on, the gospel spread globally. So that, I would say, is my biggest inspiration, you know, Jesus Christ himself.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. Interesting, your inner circle, you include a therapist. Unpack that for us, because it's unfortunate. It's been misunderstood. The only time you see a therapist is when you have deep emotional and mental issues. So tell us, why a therapist?
So it's very important for us, being and also from a medical perspective, it's very important once in a while to just, you know, debrief, review, look at yourself, you know, evaluate yourself, do a self-assessment psychologically, because there's so much pressure around us everywhere we go. In the, you know, in the West, it's the recession, global recession happening. In Kenya, there's, in East Africa, there's issues of cost of living. So if we don't realize it as leaders, these pressures can really pile up. And on a regular basis, whether you have issues or not, it is very important to be able to talk to somebody who will encourage you and also allow you to do an introspection into your life. So I found that very useful in my journey as a leader.
Okay, thanks. That's the place of a therapist. So we should all be encouraged for that. It's does not mean that you're going crazy. You know, the therapist is always seen as dealing with those issues. But thanks for really enlightening us on that. And thank you for just giving us a glimpse of how you develop yourself, how you keep your leadership edge sharp. So as a leader, what are some of the things that you have avoided to ensure that you maintain your sharp leadership edge?
So it's very important to, as a leader, to remain focused. So I have learned to just keep the main thing the main thing. There's always something to distract you as a leader. There's always going to be another opportunity, another, you know, another, for those in business, another business opportunity, an exciting moment. So the most important thing is just learning to say no and to keep, you know, and keep the focus on what you must do at that particular time. There's always going to be another opportunity to do other things. So keeping, avoiding distractions, I found it very useful so that I'm then able to just focus on what God has purposed for me in this season.
I know you've touched on a few things of low moments. Is there a particular story you can share that you are really down?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there are many. So I'll give you one. So in the year 2016, we went to Garissa County. And I'd mentioned earlier that our model is to provide quality healthcare to the underserved communities. So before we went to Garissa in 2016, patients would leave the Dadaab, the refugee camp there. Maybe they've had an accident and, you know, they drive for 2 hours to Garissa County. And they're unfortunately, because yes, you have the doctors and the surgeons, but because there's no CT scan there, then nobody knows what's happening in the brain. Do they have a bleed or not? So unfortunately, they would end up being referred all the way to Thika or Nairobi, but many of them would not make it. So we decided, let's go and help these people. So because of the good relationship that we had with our suppliers, they trusted us enough to give us a diagnostic equipment known as a CT scan on credit. We paid a fraction of it. And by God's grace, we were able to really transform many lives there. And we are not even buying chewing gum. We paid them faithfully over the 2.5 years or so that we were there. At some point, we thought, now we've achieved our purpose. They have an option. And we thought, okay, why don't we go and help other people? Because the county had then set up such equipment. So we said, okay, fine, let's move the unit to a different place, that is like Tok Tok. So deep down in my heart, I was not very convinced, but because my advisory board strongly suggested that, they said, okay, fine, let's move there and help more people in Loi Tok Tok. So of course, from a business point of view, it was not the wisest thing. Yes, there was need to help people there, but you know, there are also bills to pay. So when we went there, let's just say that the government policy changed. The market that we had targeted to help across the border could no longer access the Kenyan side across the border, unfortunately. And also, not only that, but also the you know, the government in Tanzania at that point set up a similar unit just across the border. So all the traffic that would have expected then was not able to access the services. They already had an option on that side. So of course, it left us with egg in our face. Did we hear God? Yes, we did. But maybe on that bit of the timing, we may not have gotten it very well. So unfortunately, the business was not sustainable. Yes, we were there to help the people, but it was not sustainable. And we struggled to, you know, keep it alive. It was a hospital. We struggled to keep it alive. And unfortunately, yes, it was impacting many people. So it was unfortunate that we had to shut it down. But the most painful part is that 6 months later, going there, one of the days, I opened the doors to go and pick something. And guess what? Patients were streaming in, you know, thinking that we had gone back. So it really brought tears to my, you know, to my eyes. And but those are some of the moments that we, you know, we learn lessons and we get better in terms of timing, in terms of strategy, and in terms of discernment as well. So that is one of the low moments that, but a learning moment as well that I could talk about.
Okay, thanks. Wow, that's real, eh? That is so real. And even as you're talking, I just want to pose another question. The health sector, you know, the health sector, the health industry, it's quite a part and parcel of every community, you know. During COVID, we saw even in advanced countries, the strength of their health sector. And it was very fascinating to note that even the advanced countries, it collapsed. You know, they are not able to meet or have the facilities. And when I think of the health sector or the health industry, my question to you is this, Stephen. What kind of leadership is needed in that sector?
I hear you. I think you've rightly alluded to it. So it needs a very versatile mind, number one, in the health sector, because things keep changing, disease patterns change. Nobody knew COVID would come here and, you know, confine us and really stretch our health systems, you know, to the limit. So it needs a very versatile and a very adaptive mind to be able to lead in healthcare. The other thing is that it also needs a lot of resilience, because some of the things that we do it out of passion and because we love what we do. So, and moments are not always easy. So as a leader in healthcare, it needs a lot of grit and knowing your why are you doing what you're doing? So that I found very useful in being able to drive impact and also being able to scale the healthcare business, because yes, there are opportunities also in healthcare to be able to scale the models, but that has to be done efficiently. We are not ordinarily or traditionally taught, you know, extensively in terms of management and, you know, and leadership. And I found opportunity to empower even other healthcare professionals in that regard, train them to be leaders, to be managers, because that's a very useful skill to be able to drive impact in the healthcare industry. I think the other thing I would say is that it's very important also to have structures and systems in place, because the days of going to your business or you know, clinic and you put, whilst trusting the patients, you put the money in the pocket, that's not good stewardship. So we need a stewardship mindset. Remember the resources that God has given us. We are empowered to multiply those for the sake of his kingdom and be able to drive even bigger impact so that the gospel may be preached. So it also needs a stewardship mindset that whatever opportunity, whether it is the time, whether it is the human resource that God has given us in healthcare, we need to use it wisely. Patients no longer have the time to wait a whole day to access medical care. So are we being good stewards even as we serve the clients who come to us seeking healthcare?
And as we think about this, another twist comes in, Stephen. There's a certain fear that now with AI, with IoT and ICT, you know, technology coming in, it's beginning to play a big part. And like I believe you in what, even in your area, you know, analysis and diagnosis, it's machines are really taking that space. How should that be looked like? And it's becoming, efficiency is becoming more and better. But what is the place of ICT in the medical field?
So a lot of things have made diagnosis and patient care easier and better. And I'll give an example. Technology changes mean that things are becoming more efficient and cheaper. To check, let's say, the kidney function tests or the thyroid, which is a gland just in front of the neck, a few years back, it needed an equipment that is worth about $30,000 to be able to test that. Right now, as we speak, there's a smaller, faster piece of equipment that is worth 10%, which is $3,000 of that. So obviously, that has caused a shift in terms of accessibility to healthcare. And it's a good thing because it means now more people can be able to afford. But if your business model was, let's say, hinged on, or was fixated on that, you know, that older equipment, then, you know, there could be trouble there. So you need to be adaptive and to see how can I use technology to better myself. The equipment now which come with an immediate analysis, if you do an ECG or a heart checkup, or even sometimes even equipment like CT scans, there's some of them now which are prepackaged with a diagnostic tool that doesn't need a radiologist to give, you know, their opinion. So how do we embrace that as opposed to seeing it as, you know, eating into what our knowledge base is? Why can't we then iterate and now provide more innovative solutions? So it calls for a lot of us to, not just in healthcare, but even in other industries, to be able to adapt to the times. And I believe it's affecting all the industries. Before, people were buying those large cameras, and then you also have an alarm clock, and you also have a phone, which in Kenya here we call Mulikamwizi. Now there are gadgets which can do all those in one. Obviously with the advent of the phone that has the Android phones and the current phones that have the smartphones that have replaced that. If somebody sticks to what they know, then they're going to be rendered irrelevant. So for us in healthcare, we keep adapting and we keep changing because diseases are becoming easier to diagnose. People are now more aware about their health. A lot of tests can be done at home. So how do we support them better? Traditionally, people would come to hospital, but right now, the other day I was talking to a colleague who on his phone, he can just see there's a patient who had the blood pressure rising after being in hospital for, you know, had been seen in hospital. And reason being, so when they checked, he could easily check and see. Remember, the blood pressure was being taken at home. So he could easily check and see that the patient had taken 2 out of 3 medicines. Did the patient have to travel all the way to hospital to the big city? No. The medicine was just, they were just given instructions that this is the medicine that you missed. Now, that is the power of AI. In fact, the technology is so advanced that he got an alert on his phone that this patient's blood pressure is rising. Yeah, so that is a big advantage even for the general population to be able to get better access to quality and better access to healthcare. So it's a good thing. Depends on how we look at it, but it's something that we should embrace.
Yeah, really. We have to embrace it. It's here with us. Eh? We can't fight it. We just have to embrace it and leverage on it. Because definitely it's a challenge to the human resource. And as you said, in all fields. So, Steve, given a chance to restart again as a leader, how would you lead differently?
I think I would be better at reading the room. I have since grown from that time of sipping the tea loudly. I've learned a lot in terms of becoming a more aware leader, in terms of being more emotionally intelligent. I've had to learn that and to, you know, just become better at it. I would manage my communications better in terms of just being able to handle different personalities better at an early stage. I made a lot of my mistakes at the early stage of the business because of, you know, that, you know, these people who think it's my way or the highway. I used to be like that. So I have to confess, I'm a recovered, a very dominant personality. So I've learned to embrace other people's ideas, and of course I've had to go back and apologize to people that I may have rubbed the wrong way. So that is something that I would do differently, and I would also be more empathetic, even at an earlier stage, trying to put yourself in other people's shoes. So I'm learning slowly to become even better at that, so that we build better relationships at the workplace, even at home as well.
Talking about now, I mean, you've gone a bit into your personal life. Question is, how has your leadership responsibilities affected your personality or personal life? I know you talked about your relationship with your wife, but generally, how has that affected you?
I've come a long way, must say. Being in a position where there's a lot of expectation on you as the leader, as a team leader, in terms of crisis, in terms of when things are doing well, I've learned to empower people, to allow them to take the glory. I mean, I've also learned to take responsibility as a good steward. When things go wrong, I'm always the first one to, to say, here, we missed it, guys. I'm sorry. I take responsibility. So that has really come, and with a lot of humility, I've learned it sometimes even the hard way, because life has a way of humbling you sometimes. So I have learned also to listen better, to become more analytical, and also the power of teamwork and different mindsets. So any time an employee comes into organization, the first thing we do is a personality test, so that we see how do we enable you to thrive, because we are not all the same. There are those who are, the dominant personality. There are those who are inspirational. There are those who are supportive. There are those who are conscientious. So how do we build each other? So I've learned over time to embrace that, because we can't all be the same. Previously, I would hire people who are like me. But over time, obviously, I've learned to become a better person and to embrace the different strengths and that God has given us, and weaknesses as well.
So if you're to sit with a new leader and they would ask you, what do I need to do to become an effective leader like you?
So I'd break it down into four. I would say, number one, know your reason. Why is it that you do what you do? What is the why? What is the big why? Why are you doing what you're doing? Because that will keep you focused on the journey, irrespective of when the tribulations come. You'll always be committed to what you do, because knowing the why allows a very positive outcome, irrespective of the circumstances, and sometimes even negative outcomes. But if you know your reason, if you know why you're doing what you're doing, then it enables you to weather the storms, irrespective of the circumstances. And I draw a lot of lessons from the story of Joseph. He was given his vision at 17 years, but the guy was in prison for almost 10 years, and he only became a deputy governor at after 17 years, at 30. So the time difference between the dream and the actualization was at 30, was 17 years. But he never lost his why. He was meant to transform the world. He never lost that purpose. The other thing is that know your season. What season are you in? The Bible says in Ecclesiastes 3 that there's a time to sow and there's a time to reap. What season are you in? If you're a leader, timing is everything. Timing is really everything. Is it the time to plant? Is it the time to, to focus on strategy? Is it the time to, if let's say you're in business, what phase are you in? Are you in that bootstrapping phase? Are you in the exponential phase? Or is it a time when you need to change the model of the business? And in all these phases, how do you market, for example? How do you strategize? The marketing has to be very different. The strategy has to be very different. In the initial phase of a business, your strategy is to make sure you have enough capital. But as you grow, you need to be thinking about the next business model. What am I going to change next so that I remain relevant in the market? In relationships, the truth said at the wrong time can, for example, ruin a marriage or ruin a work relationship. When do you time it right? And the story is told of the parable of the wheat and tares, that the enemy went and planted tares in the middle of the night. So when the time came for the growth to happen, the workers realized that the tares were amongst the wheat, and they told the master, we want to uproot this. But he said, do not uproot them until the time for harvest is right. Otherwise, you'll end up not having a harvest. So know your season, very important. The other thing is know your business or your area of expertise. From those humble beginnings when we started, I know how hard it is to clean the whole floor and to find that there is no dust on the handsets of the phone. I know how hard my team works when they see 20, 30 patients in a day. I know they probably can't function at the end of the day. It's very busy because I've been there, done that. What, know your area of expertise so that if there be any reason to innovate or to empathize with other people, then you have that opportunity to do that. And then know your biggest risk as well as a leader and as an individual. What is your biggest risk? If you're in real estate, for example, your biggest risk could as well be something simple like setting up next to a swamp and or a changing government policy. If you're in a different field, like let's say if you're a pastor, for example, your biggest risk is if your team members are not working in sync. And that may just mean you need to sit them down and have them working together. Or it may be easy as killing off gossip in the church, which is not true. It may mean clarifying to the congregation. So what is your biggest risk as a leader? That, I believe, is something that I'd advise any leader who is coming in to take up a new role.
Oh, wow. Great nuggets there for a new leader. Looking ahead and wanting to leave a legacy, for you, what would that be?
Thanks, George. I think I would wish to leave a legacy of being a transformational leader, somebody who came and allowed others to grow, built them up, or rather strengthened their ways of thinking from where they were and raised them to a higher level. I say that because I've come a long way personally, and I made a lot of mistakes. I even wonder, the guys we've done business with, how did they even work with this guy who was very slow, very extremely emotional, extremely fast in making decisions? I have learned the power of walking the journey and being transformed through the power of the Holy Spirit and through Jesus Christ. So my legacy that I would say I would wish to have as a leader is that somebody who came and transformed many people that we interact with, that they came and through our interactions, they became better people, they became better stewards, better spouses, better parents, better business leaders, and better leaders in the community as well. That is my prayer, and that would be my legacy that I would wish to have.
Ah, beautiful legacy, and I wish you well even as you do that, Stephen. Final thoughts or words before we say goodbye?
Mine would just be to say thank you for this opportunity to really just inform thoughts and minds across Africa and beyond. I must say this is a real honor for me, and there's nothing as powerful as telling the stories the way they are, authentically and openly as they are. Because to be able to transform Africa and the world, we really need to have such authentic conversations, celebrate our successes, celebrate our failures, which is one thing we don't do as Africa. We don't celebrate failures, yet that is part of the journey. And when you fail as a leader, it is important to, they say, fail cheaply, fail quickly, and fail forward. So don't take 2-3 years mourning over failure. Pick yourself up, move on. It happens in life. We all fail. But let's remember those of us who may not, even who have made mistakes, and celebrate them, because by doing that, they'll become better people. And through that, then we'll be able to transform the communities around us in the world. So that would be my thoughts as regards to what I would pray. That would be my prayer. And I draw inspiration from Christ. Once again, just looking back at what he was able to do within the short time of ministry. 3 years is a very short time, but he was being prepared, remember, for 30 years. So to be able to drive impact, we should not despise the preparation phase. Everything has a process. We need to be patient. We need to embrace the journey, learn from our mistakes, and be able to allow ourselves to drive impact while focusing on what really are we called to do. We need to focus on the purpose for which God has called us. Every one of us is special. We have a special purpose. We need to be able to focus on that even as we journey through life.
Thank you. Well said. Wish you all the best in what you are doing and wonderful work in the health sector. And I love the mission and the vision of your company. And I pray that God will continue giving success and using you to touch and transform lives through the work that you do. God bless you and hope to keep in touch even in the future. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you, George. It's such an honor. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.